Portage Health Foundation is proud to introduce you to Superior Educator Dominique Crowley from Chassel Schools. Mrs. Crowley's positive outlook continues to spark creativity and kindness in her classroom. She excels at making education fun and exciting for her students. Her infectious smile brightens the days, and her dedication to education is clear to see in the students' progress as they learn and grow. If you know an amazing educator like Mrs. Crowley, go to superioreducators.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Superior Educator.
Welcome back to the second portion of Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is, as always, brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. You can learn more about them at phfgive.org. Today we are saluting the 125th anniversary of Finlandia University. They have events, as we talked about in the first segment, coming up through the latter part of this month to commemorate 125 years of service to not only our local area, but also to the educational community across the Upper Peninsula, and to some extent across a much wider region. And we'll talk a little bit about that now with Joanna Chopp, who is the archivist at Finlandia University. We'll get a little bit of history and perspective on where Finlandia came from, why we have it, and its impact over the last 125 years. Joanna, thank you for joining me on the program.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
You are generally kind of down in the underbelly of the Finnish American Heritage Center, are you not?
Yes, I like to refer to it as the dungeon.
You're in the dungeon. Tell me a little bit about what is archived there.
Well, we aren't what people think of traditionally as an archive, even though that's what we call ourselves. We have a little bit of everything. So in addition to traditional archive materials, books, magazines, newspapers, photographs, diaries, letters, business records, personal records, genealogies, things like that. We also have a large artifact collection. So we've got textiles, farming implements, fishing implements, household items, musical instruments, a little bit of everything.
Where has all of this come from?
The early part of the collection. The archive was officially established in 1932. Most of that was by donation. There was also a concerted effort by faculty and staff here at SUMI College to actively start collecting these things before they disappeared. So as, say, congregations would merge or, you know, businesses would be sold off, there was a concerted effort to find those records and preserve them. Everything for more modern times is by donation. People who recognize that, you know, hey, I've got this thing in my grandmother's house and I don't read Finnish, I don't know what this is, would you be interested? That's how most of our materials come here.
So if folks have genealogy records, if they have business records, maybe something their family was involved with over the years, if they have artifacts, you would be interested in them?
Definitely.
Our family recently donated some of our historical objects to a museum in my hometown, and they're going to be on display there, and people are able to look at them, and it's going to be something that a lot of people can enjoy instead of sitting in boxes in our basement. And
exactly.
I'm sure that this is kind of the same thing that a lot of other people would look at in regards to documenting the heritage, particularly of the Finnish people here in the Copper Country.
Yeah, and, you know, even though more and more people don't speak the language, can't read it, we do have those resources here, and we want to preserve all of those voices of Finnish immigration and Finnish America before they disappear.
Suppose I had something in my collection in a box in the attic or something like that, and maybe they were letters in Finnish or books in Finnish, records in Finnish. Do you have somebody who could help just translate them for me so I could find out what the heck they are?
Usually we have interns from Finland on staff here. We don't have any interns right now because of COVID and, you know, visa issues. But usually, yes, we would have someone here on staff who could help with that. And in the interim, we are finding people in the community that can help us do that.
Do the Finnish interns, are they able to converse in what the old Finnish was here? I have heard it said that people who come here from Finland who speak the modern version of the language find our interpretation of it to be a little old-fashioned and quaint.
Yes, most of the Finnish spoken here is like Finnish from 100 years ago. That was, you know, passed on from generation to generation in a very informal setting. Our interns typically can decipher it, but it's sort of another added layer of linguistical challenge sometimes.
And probably some antique phrases and words and such that have fallen out of the modern Finnish language.
And you get things written in Finglish, which is sort of like this weird hybrid that oftentimes stumps them. But if you read it out loud, you can usually tell what it was meant to be.
Do you confine your collection to just Finnish artifacts, or do you also have some things from some of the other groups that immigrated to the Copper Country?
We typically focus on Finnish-related materials. There are a few exceptions. For example, one of the first churches that was set up here in Hancock in, I think, the 1870s was actually a concerted effort between the Swedes, the Finns, and the Norwegians in the area. They didn't have enough people to have their own congregations yet. So some of those materials are written in, I believe, Norwegian. We do have some genealogical materials and stuff as well from like the Swede Finns and things like that. But for the most part, it's Finnish focused.
How do you learn about the history and the language and such so that you can understand what you're archiving?
That is an excellent question. I am not fluent in Finnish, unfortunately, though I have tried. It's a challenge. Occupational hazard, I have picked up a lot of reading skill in Finnish. My speaking skills they leave something to be desired.
Well, the pronunciation is one of the things that I like about Finnish, at least from a cursory standpoint, is even though I don't speak the language, most everything in it, I am told, most vowel combinations, I call them the Finnish diphthongs, and such, typically are very, very consistent, although I'm told that if you really want to speak the language, there are some subtleties involving accents and placement and things of that nature. So from a guy who just has to occasionally read Finnish words, I can usually get pretty close, but I have no idea how they work in the language and such. So it's a challenging language, I'm told.
It is. Reading it, you can pretty much do it phonetically, as long as, you know, if there's double vowels, you stress the double vowels, so every letter is pronounced. But yes, you add umlauts in there, and their pronunciation of the letter Y is always a challenge for me. So, yeah, there's some challenge there.
Yeah, and the letter J, which does not exist in the Finnish alphabet, the J sound isn't there, but a lot of people now who live here have anglicized their names to the point where if they have a J in it, it's voiced.
Oh, yeah. So you have the Jutila Center here on campus.
Yeah, which would be the Jutila Center
appropriately.
So, so you've got this stuff, and what purpose does this all serve?
The archive?
Yeah.
Well, we are a research facility, so we help people do research. Most of my researchers who come in are looking for family information, doing genealogy. But we have had authors, we've had scholars, we've had filmmakers, student people who are doing, you know, National History Day projects. If you work with us, we can pretty much, I think, find something for your interest.
So let's go back, Joanna Chop, 125 years, or actually probably a little bit more than that in terms of when the organization of this all started. And Pastor Nicander, I believe, kind of the spearhead for all of this. Why did they decide that a university was needed here? And why particularly did they think that it needed to be so Finnish-oriented?
Well, Suomi College and Theological Seminary was founded by Finnish immigrants like Nicander in 1896 with the purpose to educate their children. They wanted to teach them English and like business skills, you know, typing, shorthand, things that would help them find jobs, and also to train Finnish-speaking clergy to minister to the growing number of immigrants in this area and in all Finnish communities across the U.S.
And I think we need to remember that at that point, there were a lot of people here for whom Finnish was their first language, and in many cases, I suppose, their only language.
Yes, especially that first immigrant generation, where they were settling in Finnish communities, where there was probably a store, where the store clerk spoke Finnish. There was probably someone working in the post office who spoke Finnish. The people they worked with in close quarters probably spoke Finnish as well. So there wasn't necessarily a need, but as, you know, subsequent generations were born and raised here, that became more and more of a requirement.
And I know that there are some people who immigrated to the United States from all of the European countries and other places as well, I'm sure, that on one hand, some of them wanted to keep their heritage alive and intact. On the other hand, I had a grandfather who immigrated from the Netherlands who went to great extent to become an quote-unquote American. He buried his Dutch heritage. He buried his Dutch accent. A lot of people really wanted to become American very quickly.
Yes, and I think that did happen within the Finnish-American community as well. But I think because there was such a large number of them here in the Copper Country, and they had all of these organizations where they could express their Finnishness. So besides the Suomi Synod churches, there was the Apostolic Lutheran Churches, there was the National Finnish Lutheran Church, there was the Fraternal Society, the Knights and Ladies of Kaleva, the Temperance Societies were huge in the Finnish-American community. You had all of these places in their personal lives where they could still be Finnish and still speak the language, and I think that's part of why the Finnishness of this area has really hung on for so long.
So what would life have been like for those students in the earliest days of what we now call Finlandia University, but was, of course, known as, at the time as Suomi College?
Mm-hmm. Well, the college, when it first met, they rented space in a building on the west end of Quincy Street here in Hancock, and they were there for a number of years. Old Main, which is the iconic building on campus, wasn't built until 1899, I believe. So everybody sort of lived in this rented space, including the instructors. And it was a very small group starting out, and it grew and grew, and we're still around today.
Yeah, it sounds like a very humble beginning. What kind of subjects were taught?
It was very basic things. English, obviously, Finnish, religion. There was a huge emphasis on music, even right from the beginning, that grew and grew. There was a much beloved music teacher named Marty Nissonen, who then was followed up by another beloved music teacher in, I think, the 50s, Art Hill. And many of the alum that I talk to who come back to visit remember music as being a huge part of their time here.
What happened to that program?
That's a good question. Like so many, I think, extracurriculars, more emphasis has been placed on, you know, the hard academics, and music has sort of fallen by the way.
And I suppose there are just a lot more things for students to do these days than there
Definitely.
Were 100, 125 years ago. There, you know, we didn't have media at that point. We certainly didn't have the internet. I would imagine that that early Finlandia community was a fairly tight-knit group of people.
Yeah, there's actually a really funny story that Jim Curdy told me a while ago, that Suomi College in the early days used to be known as the shoe factory, because people would come here as students and then they would leave in pairs because so many people met their spouses here.
Okay, but I can certainly see that.
Yes, and I'm actually a product of that. My parents met here in the 70s, and I'm only around because Suomi College is here.
Suomi College was basically a two-year college for, well, even at this point, much of its history.
Yes. The focus was more on business skills, you know, things that you would learn to get you a job, and then on prep for higher education.
How expensive was it to attend Finlandia back in those early days?
Ooh, that's a good question that I actually can't answer off the top of my head.
Okay, I'm wondering because the typical pattern of immigrants was that there was a trade-off. You know, the immigrant came to the United States and worked pretty hard for not much money. And we certainly saw that here with a lot of people working in the mines. That was hard work and you didn't get rich doing it. Mm-hmm. But they did it as the trade-off because they knew that the next generation was going to have a better chance at a good life here than they might otherwise have had back where they came from. So I'm assuming that there were families who made some financial sacrifice and some significant financial sacrifice to get their kids into Finlandia University to try to achieve that next step up on the ladder toward the American dream.
Definitely. And we actually have a document. It's one of my favorite pieces in the archive. It's a letter that was typed on a thin sheet of copper in, I believe, 1936 by a student who went here from, I think, the Ontonagon area. And he was writing back home to his mother. And it's a typical college student letter saying, you know, next time I come home, I'm going to bring my laundry. Thank you for sending me new shoes.
Great.
If you could send me a little bit more money, I need to buy some books. But then the last part of the letter was saying how thankful he was that his father was working so hard to be able to pay his tuition here, and that he was going to, when he graduated, he was going to do everything he could to pay it back.
And this is typed on a sheet of copper?
It is.
Was that common?
No, I think it was very much a novelty.
Okay, because I've never seen that. I've never heard of that before. So I love learning things. What other things are in the archive that are maybe a little bit unusual or that maybe have caught your interest over the years, Joanna?
Well, we've got some really cool things. I'm always partial to newspapers. I love looking through the old newspapers we have here. We have hard copy and microfilm versions of many of them. The Finnish American community had a long history of publishing. There was the Book Concern printers here at SUMI College. And I believe the first Finnish language newspaper here in Hancock was published in like 1876. So, I mean, from the very beginning of immigration, they were publishing things. But newspapers in particular give like this amazing snapshot into a specific day in history. So what was newsworthy on a national level, on a local level, people's obituaries, the social section of the newspaper is always fascinating, who was visiting who and who was in the hospital, and things that we normally put on social media now were in the newspaper.
Yeah, it's amazing the minutiae that used to get published. You know, Joe and Mary came down from Calumet to visit their son in Houghton, and they spent the day and that kind of thing. And it's the kind of thing that we, at this point now, start cautioning people not to put on social media because, you know, if you say that you're gone, then somebody reads it and breaks into your house or steals your car or something like that. Pretty much everybody knew everything about everyone back in those days.
Exactly.
Yeah, HIPAA meant nothing to them. So, and not only local newspapers, but the Finnish newspaper Chomies was located here for a number of years. And that was a newspaper that really had a national impact amongst Finnish communities.
It did, and they were, if I'm not mistaken, run out of town after the 1913 strike because they were a leftist-leaning newspaper, and they moved to Superior, Wisconsin, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right, Duluth Superior area, and they had come here from Massachusetts.
Yes.
And were here for a while. They were here through the strike. What do we know about what was going on at Finlandia during that copper strike, 1913-1914?
That's not an area I've researched much on my own. I believe the college tended to side with mine management. I don't know to what extent anybody here was actively involved in any of that, but I imagine just by proximity, it would have had a huge effect. I'm sure there were students here whose parents were involved, but whatever the involvement was, you know, SUMI College sort of came out on the other side of that as well.
Yeah, I've never seen any reference to it in any of the materials that I have studied over the years about the 1913-1914 strike. I've never seen the university referenced at all. I was, and perhaps it was just a little bit of an island that was segregated away from all of that.
That could very well be that it wasn't necessarily a direct impact that action had to be taken.
Were there ups and downs over the years for a small college? I would imagine there were times where maybe the future looked kind of bleak.
There were. I've seen newspaper articles. I'm blanking on the exact date, but there were times where SUNY College was talking about moving to a different location, someplace that maybe wasn't so regionally isolated. I know even from the very beginning, there were other sites that were looked at for SUNY College to be built. I know there was a site picked out in Houghton at one point, Duluth, Minneapolis. A delegation went to Marquette to look at a building. I think there was even a proposal to have it built in Ohio.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, that came out of left field. I had not heard that one before. Well, and let's face it, even today, the Copper Country is a little bit remote and a little bit isolated. I can only imagine what it must have been like 125 years ago to try to get people here. The student population must have been almost exclusively local for a long time.
Yes, I believe so. And I think the first graduating class, which graduated in 1904, I think there was less than a dozen people in that class.
Were women included from the start, or was it just a male institution like so many were at that time?
No, women were encouraged to enroll here right from the beginning. I believe the first graduating class had three women. The only program that was off limits to women was the seminary.
Okay, that would make sense in regards to the religious beliefs at the time, and still in the case of some of the more conservative Lutheran offshoots. There are so many different Lutheran versions. Over the years, Finlandia has been associated with the Lutheran Church from the start. Now, of course, is associated with ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Yes.
How did that play out, and why did they go that direction instead of with some of the other options that existed?
Well, I know that even from the beginning, the SUNY Synod actually predates SUNY College. The SUNY Synod was founded in 1890 by some of these pioneer pastors, Nicander and Wargelin, Talonen, Hoika. And I think they were following more closely the official church in Finland, whereas, say, like the Apostolic Lutheran or the National Finnish Lutheran Church here were sort of their own groups. The SUNY Synod, the seminary was here until I think the 50s when they separated from SUNY College and then affiliated with the Chicago Lutheran Seminary, I believe. And then SUNY Synod merged into the Lutheran Church in America in 62, which then merged into the ELCA in 88. It's a huge, long progression, but they've pretty much stayed consistent in the flavor of Lutheranism.
Yeah, and it's still a very actively supported church within the Evangelical Lutheran Church organization. It's one of their flagship colleges and
yeah.
Gets support from a lot of the local churches. So the switch to four-year was made when?
In 2000, it became Finlandia University. The name changed along with the duration of study, and we became a university.
And so we celebrate 125 years now of Finlandia University with the celebration, as we talked in the first segment of the program, kind of culminating later this month. And again, you can go to Finlandia University's website and find out more about what is planned. And Joanna Chop, if somebody is interested in what you have in the archives, or if somebody is interested in donating something to the archives, how do they reach you, find you, get in touch with you?
They can call me. They can email me. We have an active Facebook page. All of our contact information is on our website.
Very good. So get in touch with and Joanna Chop, thank you so much. I learned a whole lot in this conversation, and I appreciate your talking to us about Finlandia history.
You're very welcome.
Next week on the program, more history. I'll talk with folks from the Keweenaw County Historical Society, and we'll take a deep dive into the expansion plans for the Keweenaw Co-op. They have big things that are coming to downtown Hancock. So join us next week. Copper Country Today continues in a moment.